So we start by a brief meditation where we set our intention. And so you've probably been seeing Venerable Rubina do something similar to that. And like all of our actions, if we really focus on why we're doing something in the beginning, it's more powerful, either for better or worse. So we're going to try to set it for better. So we take a minute to get into a comfortable position. If you're seated in a chair, just make sure your feet are flat on the floor. And it's most important that your spine is as straight as possible. If you're seated on the floor, the whole cushion helps tilt your pelvis up again so that your back is straight. Okay, and then you can place your left hand just below your navel if you'd like, and your right hand gently on top of it, thumbs gently touching, just barely, so that they're making a nice little circle there, right just below your belly button. Your arms out away from your side so that you can breathe freely. It's not all cramped in there. You tuck your chin just a little bit so that your neck is straight. And just check, make sure that your jaw is not clenched. So keep your teeth just a little bit apart. Put your tongue on the back of your front teeth. And then you can either close your eyes all the way or leave them a little bit open so that some light can come in and keep you alert. And then you put all of your awareness on your breathing. And so traditional meditation on focusing is to put all of that awareness on the sensation of inhaling and exhaling, either at your nostrils or your diaphragm. And then you would count so that one inhalation, exhalation is one. And then you bring all of your attention to that, and you can count to 5, 10, whatever is helpful to you. I'm letting you know that we're not going to do much of that tonight right now. I'm going to walk you through more of a review meditation. But let's just start by letting everything go from the day and putting your attention on your breathing for at least 3 breaths. And trying to really let go all the thoughts that are cluttering your mind, any discomfort, sluggishness. As you exhale, see it leave. And as you inhale, breathe in fresh, bright energy, filling every cell in your body. And now it's always helpful before any practice or any meditation to take a minute to reflect on impermanence. It can either be the impermanence of this life, which can then kind of light a fire under your rear end to get moving. But it can also just be on the beauty of impermanence, in that we're not ever stuck. That we are riding on the crest of our own wave. And that what we put into our mind shapes that wave. And so with these two kind of motivations that impermanence brings us, we just take a minute to reflect on that. And what an amazing chance we have right now because of impermanence. And then what I usually do after that is I take a minute to think about why I want out of this samsara. Why do I want to get out of this prison? Is it really a prison? The samsaric cyclic existence. What are the downsides of it? It's just taking a moment to recall the first noble truth of suffering. So I look at all of my attempts at happiness, the kind of unreliable nature of happiness, the things that I think will bring me happiness that often don't, trying to refresh my intention and my wish to be free. And then from there, I think about that there are others who have made it. There are other people who have become enlightened. We know their stories. They inspire us. They're showing us the way. And I have this precious chance, this amazing life, full of opportunities that very few people have, to follow that path, to do as much as I can in this lifetime to further myself. So at this point, I'm feeling pretty excited. And then I take a minute to remember that all of the beings around me who are, I share this prison with. Again, trying to remind myself that it's not just this beautiful planet, but there's also this entrapment, this cyclic existence, and how amazing it would be not only to be free of it, but to also to be able to free all of the other beings that I love so much around me. I make a strong determination that I'm going to use this time, this moment, this all the effort we put into getting here today, to taking this time when so many other things we could be doing. I make a strong determination to use this hour, this moment, to lead me on that journey out of this prison and helping others to get out as well. And so then building on the theme of developing bodhicitta, we've been talking a lot about our mother's kindness and remembering the all beings as our mothers. So just take a minute to think about your mother. And if for some reason you'd rather think about somebody else who's been as kind, then pick that person. I'm just going to use the term mother, but you know who you're going to focus on. And take one period in your life to think about the kindness of this person. One thing that comes to mind easily could have been you had the measles when you were a kid. It could have been last week. Anything that comes to mind easily where it's easy to recall something that your mother did. At minimum, she gave birth to you. So you can meditate on that. And really try to see it in your mind's eye. Try to recall if it was that you had the measles, you know, that feeling of somebody coming and giving you food and worrying about you, what it was like, and try to expand that vision to see things that you might not have noticed before. How it felt to be the object of that kindness. So just like with our breathing now, we're placing all of our awareness on that topic of the mother's kindness. Almost can feel as if we are a container that she's just pouring all this love into. And when you have that feeling, then try to generate a strong wish to repay it. And then since we've been talking about how all beings have been our mothers, have been connected to us, have been kind to us, try to expand that wish to repay the mother's kindness to include everyone in this room, everyone in your life, everyone on the planet, everyone that you can don't even see. And then open your eyes. Okay, so it's been a couple of weeks since I've seen some of you, and for some of you, it's brand new time I'm seeing you. So my name is Stephanie, or Steep. Steep is my nickname. And this is the Discovering Buddhism class. And we were lucky enough to have Venerable Rabina leading it the last two times, one while I was out of town in New Orleans, and last week she was here as well. So I thought I'd just start by seeing if there's any questions that came up while she was talking that you want to make sure that I cover today or in the next couple of classes. And usually we pass around this microphone, but I know sometimes that really inhibits people from talking. So don't feel like you have to use the mic. I will repeat what you've said if at any point you want to ask a question. The reason we have all these mics is because people are watching at home. Hello, everybody. And so they like to hear the questions as well. So anyway, is there anything kind of left hanging or like, I don't know what she was talking about with this topic or that topic or... Okay. That's a surprise because usually it's like I'm getting a pop quiz suddenly when I'm sitting here. I get a zillion questions, so I have a feeling they might be lingering, so just let me know. So a couple of things I wanted to just review. I know that... raise your hand if you were here when Venerable Rabina was here, just so I know if she covered. Okay. So we've been talking about how to develop bodhicitta. And anybody have a good working definition of bodhicitta that you want to share with people who don't or first time? It's going to be on the test. So, yes.
Can you say to develop a mind to benefit all human beings?
Yeah. That's a good definition. You want to repeat that? Oh, do I repeat it? Yeah, that's right. Okay. To develop the mind that has the wish to help all sentient beings. Okay. Citta means mind, and bodhi means awakened. Awakened from what? From ignorance. So bodhicitta is the mind that's awakened from ignorance, and it has this, it's such an amazing kind of wish that even just having that wish, even before you've acted on that wish, is like a bomb has gone off in your mind. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So when Geshe was talking to me about it, we've talked about the different kinds of bodhicitta, and one being the active bodhicitta, when you're putting this into action. But even before that, when you've developed that wish, it's something that we find hard to even grasp, without it being there yet in our lives. We see people that we can feel something from. So I have this wonderful video, maybe I'll bring it on the last class. I've showed it to Geshe a couple of times. It's a documentary on Mother Teresa, and you can see how people feel just in her presence, just because of her level of compassion. She hasn't said anything. She, as Geshe said, she's not gorgeous. So people are going to her because they're feeling something around her, that incredible love, that incredible heart. And so we get these glimpses of what it's like when people have developed something that we don't have, and we can see how wonderful it feels. It's not that they're giving up their happiness. It's that they're moving from happiness to happiness. Even when they are, it looks like they've given up their whole life to help somebody else, they're in incredible bliss. So it's not this huge self-sacrifice. It's joy meeting joy. So we get this glimpse that it's possible, and we move towards it. And we've been talking about the different ways, traditional texts on how to develop bodhicitta, and they come down from these two different types of teachers. Okay, one is Lama Atisha, and he taught the seven-point cause and effect. And, you know, I can talk to you about that and point you to different teachings if you weren't here when we went over it, but it's a very clear step-by-step. But I also want to point out that it can be certainly done in a meditation with those 7 points. But it can also be done mishmash. It's not that you have to do it that way. That's a traditional way to do it. But throughout the day, as you're walking around, you can take one of those 7 points and use that. You can walk around and think, okay, all beings have been my mothers. Huh, well, what's that like if I look at everybody as having been my mother? That's one of the steps. Okay, you don't have to necessarily do it in that order. You can use them like antidotes to help you in certain situations. We talked about how they're all based on equanimity, so that understanding that what we have in common with not just all people, but all beings, every little critter on this planet wants to move away from what causes us suffering and move towards what brings us joy. That's what we have in common with everyone. So why is that important? Because it helps us feel that equality we have with all beings. And it helps us know and helps us understand that when even somebody's doing something that is awful and is harmful to us, they're often still coming from that same place of wanting their version of happiness. And so it may be obviously not getting them happiness and leading them into more suffering, which is the whole nature of samsara. But it helps us to understand sometimes when, say, at work, somebody's acting really awful and kind of pushy and competitive, to go back to that all beings want happiness. Somehow that's what's motivating this person. They're trying to move towards what they think will bring them happiness. This helps what's going on in my mind, helps get all those stories out of my mind so that I can have as much equanimity as possible. And why is that important? Remember the analogy we've talked about, like our consciousness being like a river. And if I can keep my consciousness and my mind stream as calm as possible, then all the beings around that river are going to benefit. If it's a raging royal mess and flooding everywhere, then all beings around that river will also be affected in a negative way. So almost every single thing we learn in one way or another is mind training. It's how to keep our mind calm and moving towards the goal that we want. So then the other teaching that came down from Master Shantideva is exchange for self and others. So that's where Tonglen, which we'll do a little bit of Tonglen in a little bit, comes into play. They're different, but they're complementary. And if you really have mastered exchange of self for others, then you don't necessarily need the 7-point cause and effect. But the 7-point cause and effect includes exchange of self for others. So like I said before, you can use each of them in different scenarios. You can sit and do one meditation, but it doesn't have to be after you leave the cushion that leaves. You can walk around in your life and apply them in the grocery store, in the car, at work, all the time. That's what's so handy about all of these tools. So the other thing I wanted to stress is that we start with where we are. Sometimes I think somebody was telling me that one of the things Venerable Robina was talking about is how difficult it is to develop bodhicitta. That it's easier to develop the wisdom realizing emptiness than it is to develop bodhicitta. We inch towards things. And sometimes I think when we see where it is, I see where I'm trying to go and I see that distance, it can be a little bit daunting. But, makes sense? But we start where we are. And, you know, I really, I teach people in a different setting some skills at my job. And one of the things I always ask them is, how do we think anybody changes? What helps people change? I mean, if you have something that you're really trying to change in your life, or you have a goal that you want to reach, what helps you make that change? I mean, I think we have to really start with that question before we can think about making these humongous changes that we want. But what helps people change? So I work as a mediator, and I mediate very difficult custody disputes, and where we're expecting people to suddenly get out of these, you know, enormous disputes they're in and start co-parenting. So, and I ask these mediators that I'm training, what do we think is going to help these parents change the dynamic that they're in? For me, after really wrestling with that question, I came up with my own answer, which is that the thing that helps people change is success. Guaranteed success. So instead of asking the parents in my office how they're suddenly going to, like a miracle, become co-parents, I ask them how are they going to make one phone call? You know, what would help them make one phone call? Or maybe they can't do a phone call. What would help them get this piece of information back and forth? Or what would help them, you know, just break it down. And if you have one small success, you'll be able to build another success on top of it. And similarly, with something like this, you know who you are. You have to start where you are. I mean, people can come up here and lecture all day long, but one of the things that a common line, and I've heard Venerable Rabina say it all the time, is know yourself, know your mind, because you're the only one that can know how to work with that mind. And what will give you some guaranteed success in whatever, particularly we're talking about bodhicitta, in developing bodhicitta, in developing patience, in expanding your care and concern of others, in diminishing our what we call self-grasping, self-cherishing, which is just selfishness. You know, it's so pervasive we can't even see it at times. We think selfishness is kind of this extreme thing, but oh my goodness, I can't hardly think of a minute that I'm free of it. So what will help that kind of mind? And then if we have some tiny little success, it's huge. You know, so like I was driving and I was just remembering to be aware. You know, sometimes I can't even remember that I'm supposed to be remembering. But I was remembering like, oh yeah, okay, wait a minute. I can feel in my body, like I was just starting to feel a little tense that somebody was trying to do something and get in front of me. Oh my goodness, you know, heaven forbid. And I could just suddenly let it go. Rather than just keeping my mouth shut and not getting mad, this time I could really feel myself completely let it all go and actually have a generous thought towards this other person. Other times it's kind of too late and then it's just damage control. It's like, don't make it worse. But for me, it's all about finding that magic moment where it hasn't gone too far and I've stretched my capacity a little bit, and then that's success. And then I can try to build on that and build on that. So I think a lot of it's about identifying for ourselves our obstacles, and we got in groups one time and people talked about that. One of the things I'd ask people to really look at is, because it's so critical to developing bodhicitta, is what is self-cherishing and what are the downsides of it? And I would think we need a really good working definition of this self-cherishing, because I think it gets in our way that cherishing sounds so lovely, you know, and we should love ourselves. But what is the problem then with self-cherishing? So I would like to kind of reframe that as selfishness. And how does it get in the way? I mean, we've talked before about some simple examples. I think you were mentioning being in Harris Teeter and, you know, wanting to get to the soup quickly or something like that. So, you know, we just kind of operate on that all the time because we are looking out for number one. And somewhere in us, we are number one. And it's hard to remember that. We're in a room with a gazillion other number ones. And what would it be like if you really felt that person was number one too? I remember Robert Thurman, when he came and talked years ago here, he said, you know, we fall in love because suddenly somebody else thinks we're number one. That's awesome. And then it's like, wait a minute, I don't really know that you're number one anymore. And things start to get a little shaky. But it's that feeling of like, somebody else thinks I'm number one. And so just trying to challenge all this all the time, where do we think, where is that in our life? And what can we do with that? So I'd like to open that for discussion before I get you all into little groups, to talk a little bit about this selfishness and what are the downsides of it. Oh, that looks inviting. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. Let's get into small groups of like four or five people, because I want you to really bat around this whole idea of selfishness and self-cherishing and what are the faults. I mean, this is a classic meditation in Buddhism. One of the classic meditations on everything is really meditating on the faults of something and the benefits of something else. And I used to think that was kind of like so elementary. Why was I really going to sit there and close my eyes and meditate on these faults? But it's a profound experience when you do it well. And the first time when Geshe-la had us, I think I've told some of you this story, he had us meditate on the downsides of losing your patience. And I was like, oh, you know, but you really had to go through it. And like he was leading us through it, like the downside of losing your patience is, you know, it's going to destroy your peace of mind. It's going to destroy somebody else's peace of mind. Whatever has just caused you to lose your patience, it's already happened. it's finished. I mean, you can't really change it. So the event has happened, and, you know, to really go through that list and then go through a list of the benefits of keeping your patience. Your mind is going to be calm. The other people around you is going to be calm. You can focus better on a solution. And so we had all these lists. And so I actually, by going through it, I was kind of challenged. I was like, ooh, I can't wait to lose my patience. Not to lose it, but to be challenged. I can't wait to see if I can catch it, you know? I was so excited. So sure enough, that night I had a chance. My dog at the time, you know, she liked to wake me up to go out at 2 a.m. And there she came, and I got her outside. And then it was like the third time she was doing this. And I was like, really, I felt this something rising up in me. And I thought, oh, this is it. This is it. Now, what are those downsides? She's already woken me up. And if I get upset now, it's going to be really hard to go back to sleep because I've been there and done that. And then I'll be like yelling at this dog who's not going to understand it anyway. And so I had to go outside anyway with her. My choices were to go outside with like a really angry, ticked off mind, or to go outside and like look at the stars and let her pee and go back inside and go to bed. And that was, again, that kind of turnaround point for me where I had a little bit of success. Can't say I've always kept my patience, but if I can, I had that success of applying that list right in the nick of time, and it gave me confidence that, and it was a brand new experience. I can talk myself out of it sometimes, but this was a completely different way. I hadn't already gone there. So that's why I want us to get in and into groups and kind of, again, define and look at self-cherishing. Do you really believe it's a problem? And then make a list of what are the faults and what are of self-cherishing, and what are the advantages of cherishing others, because that's going to get back into exchanging self for others. Okay, so there's new people, and there's people who have been here a while, senior folks, trying to go out and grab some of the new people. And you can sit anywhere you like. We've got about 10 minutes. Okay, don't be shy. Okay, try to finish that thought and then come back to the larger group. Okay, great. So, you know, we used to be in this, before we moved here, we used to be in this tiny little basement long, long time ago. The benefit of being in that basement was everybody was really close. You can see, you all are so far away over there. So, anyway, thank you for getting to the groups and talking. What were some of the things that you all came up with? Downsides, and I can repeat if you don't want to talk in the mic. Most people love that mic. You'd be surprised if you don't want to use it. But what were some downsides of self-cherishing? Or did anybody have problems with that definition or anything? Yeah.
Some of the problems were, for me, holding on to ideas and not wanting to share them with other people because I want to keep them for myself, mm-hmm. winds up putting me in a very lonely mm-hmm. and very tense mm-hmm. place.
Mm-hmm. And so that wanting to hold those to yourself, that's your part of self-cherishing? Is that kind of what you're getting at?
It feels at the time like self-preservation.
Uh-huh. Okay. Interesting. Anybody else? Any other downsides of self-cherishing?
We came up with a lot, so I'm sure.
Yeah. Any other ideas? Throw them out. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay, so self-cherishing could take something that and turn it around and make it bad because it's isolating, it's holding it to yourself. Yeah, absolutely. What else? Anybody else?
Well, people could avoid you.
Mm-hmm.
That was something I do if someone seems to be always interested in themselves.
Okay.
One another reason to avoid someone is if they're a drama person.
Mm-hmm.
And have a lot of anger and they misunderstand if it's not in their benefit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, it's any other ideas or any thoughts about this? Part of the thing then this week is to think even more about self-cherishing during your week. Where is it getting in the way? And you start to see it in places that you didn't really see it before. And self-cherishing, it feeds the things in our mind that are keeping us stuck. So it feeds our delusions incredibly. It feeds our afflicted mind, and it keeps us stuck in samsaric existence. That's certainly, let me see what I wrote. This is a test I took in 2007, I just found, on the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, and it was described three faults of cherishing oneself. It perpetuates negative states of mind, so it's harmful to ourself. It's harming ourselves, number one. Speaking of number one. It means that we are then not able to help others because our mind is filled with what I want and what I don't want. That's what's going on in our mind 99% of the time. This is what I want, this is what I don't want. This is what I want, this is what I don't want. So it's feeding the negative mind that's keeping us stuck here. And it means that your mind then is not able to help others because your mind is constantly thinking about what I want, what I don't want, what I want, what I don't want. And everything around us is encouraging that view. Okay? I mean, it's hard to go against that. I remember when I was in college, there was this class I took called The Politics of Sports. And it was fascinating to study politics of football and golf and all these things. But one of the things the professor wanted us to do was to come up with a cooperative sport. Could we come up with something that was fun and challenging and exciting, but wasn't just me against you? It was interesting. But all I'm getting at is that everything around us is kind of encouraging that I want, I don't want. The advertisements, everything around us is just feeding that mind. So it takes a really brave mind to try to pioneer a different way of looking at things. So let me see, with the third one I wrote, and I did pass, was that with the self-cherishing mind, you can't achieve bodhicitta. So that's why we're always going back to, you know, setting that intention, trying to remind ourselves, why do we want to get out? Where are we going? What are we trying to develop? Because it's like moving against the tide. We're having to constantly surround ourselves with where it is that we're trying to go. And then the benefits of cherishing others. Did anybody get to that question? Yes? Yeah. And what are the benefits? Any benefits that you all came up with?
We came up with that through cherishing other people, we would have better intentions, which would lead to better karma, which would lead to better karma, which would actually be good for us, but would also be good for the people that were around us as well.
Perfect.
So it was more of a, you know, when you're treating somebody with love and compassion, you're more patient with their flaws, you take your time in listening to their problems, and you want to help them instead of just going, whatever, you're always negative, you're always in this drama, that sort of thing. So.
Okay. Anything else to add to that?
Thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty much what I wrote here. It ensures your happiness, first of all, present and future. So again, you know, if it doesn't work for us as well, we're not going to continue on that road. So just remember, this isn't about pushing yourself off. It's including yourself in that circle. And it guarantees your own happiness. So it's just like you were saying, it's not just like holding your tongue. It's really turning it around so that you actually are concerned about somebody else and how wonderful that feels. So it's about your happiness. Others are happy then if you're cherishing them. And that's how bodhicitta develops, is through this cherishing of others. So it, you know, it starts and builds. It builds. It starts from cherishing others. So then, how? What are some? And because we're cherishing others, then we can move to that exchanging ourselves for others that we've been talking a little bit about here. And what is exchanging ourselves for others? And you know, there's a, like, this is one of the things I love about the practice, is there's so many things that you do that are so much about the mind. It's not always about, here, you can have my drink. You can, it's also about the mental state that you're in. So if, when you develop real renunciation, and remember I gave you that working definition, that renunciation does not mean going away from the world. It means knowing that the world goes away. When you know that the world goes away, then you still love the things of the world, but you don't hold on to them for dear life. So you enjoy them, but you're also so much more willing to give and share them. In fact, that'd be the first thing that would come to your mind when you have renunciation, because that would be the very first thought in your heart, is just to share and open, and it would be so... And I gave this analogy in the first couple of classes for those of you who weren't here. You know how you feel when you go to a hotel room and you're enjoying it. It's wonderful, but you're not expecting to live there. You're not clinging onto that hotel room and obsessing about certain things. You come in and enjoy it, and then you check out. And so similarly, same thing with this life. We come in, we enjoy it, and we check out. But we should be doing something with this life. But that gets to the clinging. Instead of clinging to it, you know, we and the things that are in our lives, we can enjoy them without that kind of clinging, and then share them. The exchange of self for others, there's so many ways to do this. So we talked also about how until we have real wisdom, we don't always know what's the best way to help somebody. Many, many examples of that. We can have all kinds of good intentions, but without that wisdom, we're not always sure how to help somebody. But we can certainly wish for them to be in a better situation. We can certainly wish for that wisdom. We can certainly mentally take on their suffering and give them our happiness. That kind of mind state is huge. That's what we're talking about a lot with exchanging self for others. So I had gotten into this habit, and now I've gotten out of it, and I got to get back to it, where everything that I was really enjoying, whether it was just recognizing that I had a really nice warm bed to sleep in every night, that mentally I could wish that and send that to others. So that, what does that do? That first of all helps me to become more of a sharing person, a generous person, helps me not cling to the things I have so much. It also is in line with giving and taking. It is that mental offering all day long. It will make me more ready to give when I can. So being aware of what I have in my life and mentally offering it, and then when I'm, and also then taking on others' suffering, that I wish that I could relieve them of that suffering, that I wish that I could give them some of what I have and take on their suffering. Before I say anything else about that, is there any questions about that? Because sometimes people have a lot of questions about what that exactly means or looks like. So I remember I told Geshe-la I once had this dream that I was on a ship and all these people were being held hostage in the, whatever it's called, inside the ship. I was up on the deck and I remember thinking, I really should go and exchange myself for one of those hostages. But I just couldn't do it. I was like enjoying the blue sky, and I knew that down in the bottom of that ship, it was going to be nasty, terrible, and I just could not. But I just kept standing there going, I know I should go down there and exchange myself for one of those hostages. So then I told Geshe-la, I said, I didn't do it, though, in the dream. I just didn't do it. And he said, yeah, but amazing, you're even contemplating it in a dream. So the message for me was twofold. One is, you know, be kind to yourself. You know, we can't just make this huge leap, but also that, just even thinking about this is something that is amazing, that how many people are thinking about these kinds of things right now. Not many. So the wish to help somebody else and to be able to exchange yourself for others is unbelievably meritorious. and to try to just keep practicing with that. That's something I know. I was with Lama Zopa Rinpoche and was watching the news, and I know that's what he was doing the whole time. As watching the news was like a whole 30 minutes of prayer for him. So there's things that we can do all day long that weave that in. So we're now going to do a little bit of Tonglen. And this is a very wonderful meditation that you can do in all kinds of situations. I've done it when visiting my mother in a nursing home, when walking down the street and seeing somebody. There are a lot of stories about Tonglen and the incredible benefits that people have felt from it. And I encourage you to, you know, we can find more stories about that. But first, I just want to introduce you to it if it's something new. So Tonglen means giving and taking. Tong meaning giving and Len mean taking. But actually, we start the meditation by taking. And it's a practice of mentally taking on someone else's suffering and giving them good things. It doesn't mean that you're sending yourself into a terrible place. So a lot of people worry that if I do this meditation, does that mean that I am now going to be suffering whatever this person is suffering? No, does not mean that. It's also conjoined with a visualization. So we're going to start with ourselves. We're going to imagine ourselves sitting in front of us. And you're going to, whatever problem that you would like to relieve yourself from, whether it's nervousness or you don't feel well or whatever, it could be big or small. I'd encourage you to start with small so you can have that success. Then you're imagining that you're inhaling that in the form of dark smoke. You're inhaling that problem. The problem has taken the shape of dark smoke. And the more you play with it, the more you'll see, well, I remember in the beginning I'd get tripped up, like I couldn't see all the smoke right away, and I was all in a tizzy. Now I've learned just to let the smoke come and come and come, and then finally I inhale it. And you'll play with whatever works for your mind. The point is that you're inhaling that problem, and as you inhale it, it breaks through all the problems that you've got. And then you're going to exhale pure white golden light to yourself, sitting in front of yourself. So you're taking on all that suffering, and then you're giving all kinds of wonderful energy. Okay? So you're going to start by seeing yourself and pick a problem, and then we'll do that. And then I'm going to have you move to something else. It could be a friend of yours. It could be somebody you're struggling with. It could be a stranger. It could be a whole nation, you know. You're going to then imagine that you're inhaling that problem from that person, that suffering, in the form of thick smoke, inhaling it. And then if you've read any Pema Chodron, she has a really wonderful description about Tonglen that you might want to check out. And she says, as you imagine that smoke down, as you're inhaling that smoke, imagine that it's bursting through your self-cherishing. It's destroying that problem that's coming to you that you're inhaling, is destroying all that self-cherishing that you're holding on to. And then now you're exhaling all your merit and goodness to this other being, and they're being filled with it. Doesn't mean that you've just sent yourself to some awful place. You're both now in this beautiful place, okay? All right, so get in your meditative posture. And remember, check your posture, tuck your chin. Just take a few nice deep breaths. And then imagine yourself sitting in front of you. And whatever issue, problem, concern that you've identified, see that coming off of this you sitting there in the form of thick smoke. And now you're going to inhale it. And as you inhale this smoke, it bursts through your own self-cherishing blocks. And then when you exhale, you send pure, crystal, clean light to the you sitting in front of you, which gets absorbed to every cell. And then again, the leftover problem comes out in the form of thick smoke. You inhale it. Again, it bursts through your blocks, your self-cherishing, your negativity, opening you wide up, filling you with white, pure, golden light that you then exhale to the you sitting in front of you. Just do this on your own for a few minutes now. And now imagine someone else sitting in front of you. Someone who you would like to try this exercise with. Identify what pain or suffering or issue they have and see it coming towards you in the form of thick smoke. Would you inhale? And as you take on this smoke, it bursts through all of your self-cherishing, all of your attachment and negativity, bursting you wide open, letting this clear, crystal clear light fill you. You exhale that to them. This now fills their every cell of their body. Just continue with that meditation for a few minutes. And still with your eyes closed, recognize that the efforts that you came, put in to coming to this class tonight and to doing this precious meditation, to sharing your thoughts with others around you, are like seeds that you have sown into the river of your own consciousness. And take a minute now to dedicate where you want these seeds to develop, how you want them to develop. You can dedicate that this energy that you've created, these karmic seeds, will ripen as the results of your own bodhicitta, that the obstacles between you and your complete enlightenment are overcome quickly, the problems that you are facing diminish, so that you can help as many people around you, that you can be as the happiest person on the planet. And lead us all into this, that most happiest state. Okay, and then open your eyes and any questions about Tonglen? Yeah.
When I was thinking of myself, mm-hmm. I had to fight the urge to problem solve.
Mm-hmm.
And with others, it's easier. In other words, you're really just sending out a thought and taking in a thought, or mm-hmm. taking in a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, well, if I did this and I did that, then this would happen. That's not, or if I sent money to these people, maybe they would have no food. That's not what you do, right?
No. This, you want to have as much focus with this as you do with just a simple breathing meditation, that is just seeing that smoke and then sending that goodness. That is definitely not about problem solving. And so if other people are having that same obstacle where you started thinking too much, especially if you're doing it for yourself, then maybe see yourself as a younger person, or when you had problems as, you know, that don't need to be solved because they're over now, you know. So just, make sure it's successful. Sometimes it's hard for me to see myself there. So, you know, again, seeing myself younger, or just seeing the smoke coming towards myself.
And that also brought up, could it be that the person is getting better? Let's say mm-hmm. someone is ill.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're doing this, is it okay to think of them getting stronger?
Sure. You know, so, I mean, I'm seeing them just surrounded by this incredible light, so then they would be. I mean, they're like blissed out, you know. This is something that's, I mean, a lot of the high lamas in Tibet will tell people that this is the most incredible meditation you can do. And that, especially like if you're not feeling well, I had a friend who was in a monastery in India, and she was quite ill, and this is what her teachers were telling her to do, that this was the best chance for her to really do the Tonglen well, because she was sick, you know. Any other thoughts or questions about Tonglen? Did you get tripped up over any of it? I think when I first did it, I wasn't really raised in any religion, so I have a lot of ignorance about what other people believe, but and I didn't get much of an education. So when I learned this, it suddenly hit me. Oh, maybe that's what people mean when they're saying that Jesus died for people's sins, and that he was taking on other people's suffering. And I never could understand how you would do that. And then I learned this meditation. I said, oh, now I understand how you do that. And that, you know, that wish alone can help people. That wish that you could take their suffering, you know, that wish that Tonglen has very powerful effects and benefits for yourself as well as the other people around you. So I would like to encourage you to practice that this week. Again, you can do it as a sitting meditation. I used to do it as walked into this nursing home. I would just walk down the halls and try to do this meditation. It kept my mind calm, which was helpful to everybody that I was dealing with. And it didn't hurt, you know. There's no side effects. bad side effects of this meditation. There's only positive side effects. So I encourage you to practice it. I know people have said, this one guy I know who was a new father, and he was having trouble connecting with his young daughter, his infant daughter, and so he did Tonglen. And he said after he did that meditation several times, it was like his whole connection with this baby changed immediately. So just see what happens. Experiment. Yeah.
How is it better when you're sick?
Right. Well, you'll have to see. So she's asking me, for those of you at home, she's asking me, how does it change when you're sick? Well, it changes your focus of your illness. So say you have got the flu or something, okay? There's just so many different ways I can answer that. But it's really personal, so experiment with it. Say you've got a headache and you've decided that, okay, I'm going to use this headache to try to reduce other people's headaches. You know, may this be... So there was this story I read. I try to keep track of all these stories because they inspire me. There was this... doctor in Africa, and he was working with some people. It was this terrible illness that was going around, and he was curing all these people, helping all these people. They hadn't come up with a vaccine for it yet, and he contracted it. And he didn't want his wife or his kids to be around him because they could get it. But he did tell somebody, he said, I hope I'm the last person that has this. May my illness help everybody else. May everybody who's ill with this, may it come kind of like land on me, and may I be the last one to have this. He died, but he's also the last person who ever had that. I mean, I'm not saying that that wish alone did that, but that wish that he had was so incredibly powerful. It eased his own suffering, and it's not going to hurt. So, you know, we talk about the three gates of body, speech, and mind. We know that our actions of body and speech can be very negative and very... We can see how the negative and the positive of those have immediate impacts on people around us. What is harder for us to really see and get is the potency and the power of having those thoughts.
Yeah.
And so think on it, meditate on it, and practice it. Yeah. Emitting smoke. Well, so you have to, you would have to think of what, I mean, it's not just a loved one, it's somebody who's suffering. So I was thinking of my uncle, who I dearly love, who is suffering now, right now, a lot, and he's in a nursing home. So when I was imagining lifting all of his suffering off of him, and then I was sending him all this incredible love and light, and so I just saw him, like, in this heavenly state then, because I had removed the problems. So if you have to pick somebody who you feel like you have some compassion for their problem, and now you're removing it. So if you already see that they have a problem, you're just putting the problem in the form of smoke. But was it the smoke that was the problem, or was it that they had a problem? Okay. Okay, so for those of you at home, she's saying that she's had a problem seeing... it was disturbing to her to see the image of smoke coming off this person who she loved. You can try other things. I think it's typically seen as smoke because it's something that's in the air and you can inhale it, and it's leaving them. So maybe the fact that, you know, focus a little bit more on the fact that it's coming away from them and you're removing it. And now focus a lot on the vision of them surrounded by this incredible, beautiful light. And end on that one, you know. And so sometimes what I see is like it just kind of this accumulated, it's like a cloud, you know, a dark cloud, if that's easier than smoke. And then you've inhaled it, so now it's no longer there. It's not on them anymore. And you've just sent them this perfect light. Yeah.
When I first started, it was almost 68.
Hmm. That's great. Yeah. In the beginning, it can feel almost kind of congesting. You know, I think that's why the power of images is just amazing. And our body will react. And That's why it's also really important to make sure our breaths are really deep and just experiment with it, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
My loved one didn't have smoke emitting from them. It was more of, like you said, a cloud. A thick cloud that separated the two of us. So I had to inhale it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Maybe instead of this horrific view of, you know, someone, you know, emitting smoke, it's just an obstacle in front of you.
Right.
The way that I didn't.
Good point. So for those of you at home, instead of it being smoke or on this person, like an obstacle between the person and yourself and that black cloud that you're then inhaling, and then it's gone, you know. Yeah. Did you? Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. Right. Well, I think it's certainly all in the same ballpark, and getting into somebody else's shoes, there's never going to be anything wrong with that. So it would just give you more juice to work with when you are trying to lift something away from them. So I think you're right on target that, yeah, if you put yourself in that person's position, then you're even better equipped to know what it is that you're trying to lift off of them. So like in my case, if I'm just... Because without that, there's not really serious compassion. It's more like pity. So if I'm looking at my uncle without really putting myself in that position of what it's like to be in that nursing home and unable to move and all and on, it's almost like it's not as powerful. But if I really can feel what that would feel like, then I want to lift that off of him. I'll take it. And I'll give you all the good things I've got, you know. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, I'm going to turn the microphone over in a minute, but what I just want to end with, we for those of you who want to keep coming, we have some articles that we've been reading, and they are, first of all, they're on a CD that you can buy out here in the Discovering Buddhism area, and the CD has all the readings for all the Discovering Buddhism classes. If you're just going to be coming to this one and you want to read it online for free, kind of, we're going to be asking you to help us, but you can go to the Kadampa Center and become a member. Really? Okay, so there's a member thing on the top, and you'll get a password, and you'll be able to go to this special site just to see the readings, and this module of the Discovering Buddhism is called Developing Bodhicitta. So our whole point is to make all of this as accessible and easy for people to reach as possible, and still, you know, it does cost money to open the center and have the heat turned on. So I'm going to turn the... Okay. Thank you. And thank you for all of you who have contributed. I know you have done an amazing job in helping. And I can tell you that I was here before we were able to bring Geshe-la here. There was just a handful of us meeting in a basement. It was wonderful, wonderful group of people. But once we were able to bring Geshe-la, it just boomed. It exploded. And he lived in my house, you know, for 9 years because we didn't really have... very much, I mean, we were scrimping and getting by, and then when we got this place, it was just a dream come true. And one of the things that always motivated me in the beginning to give in the various ways that I could give, whether it was cleaning up here or donating some money, was that I just started to understand that these long lineage of teaching, like from Shantideva, came all the way down to me. And not only am I just, you know, making a pledge or keeping the lights on, I'm really making sure that the teachings continue for the next generation and the next generation. And that was a really powerful moment for me when I realized that I'm part of that whole line. I'm not just being hit up for money, but that I'm part of that whole lineage, and we are connected to that. We are connected, especially through Geshe-la, to this you know, this whole monastery. And he talks a lot about, well, before you get a real formal teaching from somebody like him, he will sit there and tell you who he got that teaching from and who that person got that teaching from. And in that kind of Buddhist tradition, it can be linked all the way back to the Buddha. So there's no break in that. It goes all the way down to Geshe-la, who's gotten a lot of those teachings from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, then to us. And, I mean, it's just amazing because we're living in a time when we can get these things where before you'd have to, oh my goodness, the things you'd have to go through to get some of the simplest teachings. Yeah, yeah. So we hit the lottery. And so anyway, I'm going to stop now and thank you again. Next week, oh, I forgot the reading. So most people have read now the first four articles. If you're new and you'd like to read those, they're not that long. They will supplement everything that we've been talking about. And so then try to read the next two. And we will be talking next time about the six perfections, and a little bit more about Tonglen. And if there's any questions that you have, you want to make sure that I cover, then just let me know. Okay. All right. Thank you.